The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
It's Monday. We roll into Christmas week, and it'll be an interesting time, Monday through Friday. It's a very unusual week, all of this hanging in the Senate now and the House, the impeachment issue. It goes on and on. Meanwhile, we get these other stories that don't make nearly enough news, and this is really a pathetic testimonial to how far we have fallen into the hole of self-abuse and flat-out abuse of our own citizenry. I think many of you may have seen that story about the man. Let me see what state that was. Iowa? I think it was Iowa. Yeah, there was a stolen LGBTQ, a gay pride flag. And the guy lit it on fire, right? How many times have we seen people in this country burning American flags? Too many to count, especially illegal alien invaders and others burning American flags and other symbols of the Republic. This guy burns an LGBTQ flag and got 15 years in prison. I don't think any of you listening, not one of you, wherever you are in the world, would say that that's an equitable, fair sentence. Murderers get 5 to 7 years. That's common. 15 years for burning what some call a fag flag. They might as well have executed the man. If he gets out, chances are he won't. He'll never be the same. His life is destroyed. But some judge somewhere wanted to make an issue out of this and an example out of this man. A terrible hate crime. Please, he's expressing his First Amendment rights. I don't like your unofficial, completely random flag. Someone stole it, and I lit it on fire. My right. Believe me, the LGBTQ community would have no problem burning an American flag. None. Anyway, the stories just come. There's so many of them. I hope you at least read the headlines at Rents News. It's for you. And if you don't have time to read all the stories, I don't. Just read the headlines. They'll give you an awfully interesting, broad-brush portrait of what the madness situation is right now. All right. Up this first hour tonight is my friend and colleague of coming up on 9 years this March, Yoichi Shimatsu, former weekend editor of the Japan Times newspaper, a man who has risked his life nearly a dozen times biking bicycling into the radiation exclusion zone at Fukushima to do research, find out what the real story there is. He's been all over the West Coast doing his own research, up and down on the beaches, up into Seattle. He's done it all, and he is standing by this hour. We have a new report, and a special guest will join us in just a couple minutes to tell us about that new report, about interesting observations in British Columbia, Vancouver, to be exact. So stay tuned for that. Hello, Yoshi, and Merry Christmas to you.
Well, Merry Christmas Eve. We're coming upon it very soon. Generally a happy time, but not so happy here in Florida. You know, I came here to escape, well, the radioactivity in Japan, obviously. Then there's California itself. There's China. There's Hong Kong.
Yeah.
Even parts of Southeast Asia, it's been, you know, creeping in from Fukushima.
Yeah.
So I came to Florida to take a break. I figured my body needs to, you know, get out of the bombardment. And boy, I was so surprised at the low readings here and how much better I was starting to feel. Then lo and behold, last night, and we'll get into this later after, you know, talking with Rick. Boom, outdoors, massive thunderstorm and radioactivity 4 times higher than indoors. You know, this indoors was yesterday's air. Outdoors was this morning's air, you know, like this.
So it jumped by a factor of four.
Four, yeah. To nearly double the safety rate. And
wow.
Then I start to piece things together, and we'll get into the same old story here. You know, I've reported before on this hypersonic radioactive powered hypersonic rockets, you know, in China going off course and bombarding the Chinese cities for more than 2 weeks. I was getting toasted there. And I don't like these things. And then the one in Russia, of course, that killed 5 scientists, another one that went across southern Russia. China Lake, very suspicious also, maybe one of those. But this one clearly went over Florida from the Gulf of Mexico, somewhere around Alabama, okay? And it flew
now,
over.
Was this do you think that this was a nuclear-powered hypersonic vehicle of some kind?
Well, they all are. They use very hot radioactive isotopes out of a very small generator to basically supercharge the fuel.
Uh-huh.
Remember those in cars? You had those superchargers in cars where, you know,
Sure. Or if you put
alcohol, you know, some of those hot riders have alcohol injection, and the thing just speeds up, right? It boosts the power of the fuel. And that way, these things could go 5 times the speed of sound. Now, this was the most suspicious event because it was massively planned, from what I can tell from friends on the other side of the state. I'm on the Atlantic side, and they're on the Gulf side. Put our heads together, and oh, my gosh, you know, there was massive chemtrail spraying on Saturday, that's 2 days ago, over the panhandle. So that explains the cloud, because this is the sunny season in Florida. That's why all the tourists come down here. Yeah,
right.
It's because it's a sunny season. There's never any rain. This was a massive thunderstorm. And then lo and behold, I'm here on a bicycle. I'm on a bicycle everywhere. You know, so I'm on because I'm an itinerant, basically.
Yeah.
It's my, you know, form of transportation. You buy a used third-hand bicycle. It gives you a lot of third temporarily.
Yeah.
And so after measuring, it's still pitch black outside, you know, when this is happening. I was stunned. So I said, well, let's take a look at a couple of lakes. There are a lot
so
of
you,
lakes
you went,
here,
wait,
so.
You went outside in the middle of the night.
It was 3 hours of the morning. Like
you took your dosimeter out and got on your bike. All right. That's Yoshi for you.
And then I go to the lakes because I'm just figuring out. You go where the water, because it's thunder. You get boom, 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 lightning and thunder. So I figure, you know, go to where bodies of water are. Then, you know, this water, like, you know, rippling on the lakes and all that. And lo and behold, in the middle of the lakes, there's these square, flat areas, you know, like perfectly square, flat. The water's not moving. And I said, oh, my gosh, where have I seen square patterns on the water before? Off the coast of Fukushima. It was a tritium. So this rocket
the
is somehow interacting with the clouds that they made, okay? And the radionuclear tides are basically bombarding neutrons into the water in the cloud, and tritium is rainfalling. And just like, you know, like the Spartan soldiers, you know, or, you know, the Macedonian soldiers of Alexander the Great, they formed squares, you know? They formed squares on the lake. It was the most...
Sure.
Unfortunately, it was so dark, I couldn't take a photo of it. But it was, like, very shiny, you know? And the rest of it's all rippled.
Come on, Yoshi, what's the matter with you? Why didn't you swim out there and get some pictures?
Yeah.
Come on.
Well, yeah, I would have disturbed the tritium, and, you know, yeah,
You've disturbed enough tritium in your life.
Well, the people who did get close to it in Fukushima died very rapidly. This stuff is not very good for your lungs and your circulatory system. So it tends to, you know. So here I am, and, you know, my wonderful Florida break from all of it, and this stuff's pouring out of the sky, this radioactivity. Now, you know, that sounds ridiculous, right? I mean, it could be nearly a comedy. You know, right now I'm laughing about it. Although my skin is still sort of itchy, you know, because I realized it was radioactive because I woke up and the back of my hands, which were out of the covers, were getting itchy. And it's that radioactive itchiness I talked about when I was back in Fukushima. Everyone got it. Your skin gets irritated by the beta radiation. So I said, oh, no, beta radiation. I thought it was fake, and that's why I took out the dosimeter and all this stumbling around, and then figure out that something is happening out there, you know, above the boom boom of the thunder. So,
all right, well, let's
back to Alabama, Redstone Rocket Ranch.
Yeah,
so it's pretty obvious.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, we'll go back to this in a little bit. I got an email from Rick up in the Northern Oregon area. And
okay.
He said in his email, he just got back from a week in Vancouver, British Columbia, mm-hmm. and didn't see any, as in zero, seagulls.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, and probably many of you listeners who live in that area or who have been in that area know that Vancouver is seagull heaven. Seagulls all over the place there.
Absolutely. I was there 3 years ago. They're just like hanging around, begging for a bit of a sandwich or something.
I knew
very bold seagulls. They're not afraid of people. They swat.
Well, they've lost a lot of their food supply as of 3 years ago, mm-hmm. and now it appears that things are much worse. Rick is standing by. I asked him if he would be kind enough to come on and just tell us what he saw up there, or in this case, what he didn't see up there. Rick, are you there? Can you hear me all right?
Yes, I am, Jeff. Good evening.
It's very nice of you to be here. Say hello to Yoshi. He's standing by down in Florida.
Good evening, Yoshi. I've been following your work for a long time. You've done an awful lot to make us all aware of what's going on. Very
well, thanks a lot. I appreciate the compliment, and I feel sorry for those beepers that used to come up to me whenever I stopped in Vancouver. It was always a huge sight there, especially by that seaplane, you know, the seaplane base there, right, on the waterfront. You know, there were so many seagulls waddling around, swimming around. It was sort of part of the postcard scenery there.
Very good.
Absolutely.
All right.
You're referring to Cole Harbor over there, and it's really crazy that there are no seagulls.
So what happened? You were on vacation, on business. What took you up there?
I go up to Vancouver all the time. I've been going up there for probably 10 years, several times a year, stay down there near the Granville Island area right there on the bay. Let's say, so I'll go up there. I'll take my bike up there. I'll go riding around. I'll do a lot of hiking. I'll drive up to the Whistler area, spend a lot of time on the beaches looking around and stuff. I've been very concerned about Fukushima since it went off 9 years ago. As you know, it's to the west of the west coast. The winds come from the east to the west, so I was concerned that stuff's blowing over here. So I
I sent you that map, and for any of you listening, you might want to just do a simple search for North Pacific Ocean Currents and look at the maps that come up under images, and you'll understand. The Kuroshio Current and the Oyashio Current, I think I'm pronouncing those correctly.
That's correct.
Actually, the Oyashio comes down by the Kamchatka Peninsula. The Kuroshio comes up, and they meet literally right off the coast of Fukushima Prefecture. How's that? And they get together and they head east across the Pacific toward the west coast of North America. And they travel about 10 to 12 miles an hour, these currents, as one now called the North Pacific Current. And as it approaches the Washington coast, as much as any area, it actually will, it runs up against the coast and kind of rebounds, and it splits at that point. And the oncoming flow, the east direction of this current, when it hits that little rebound coming off the coast, it splits. Half of it goes north up to Seattle, through the Puget Sound, the San Juan Islands, all the way up the BC coast into the Gulf of Alaska, where it goes around and around and around with nowhere else to go. And it's been concentrating up there for 8 3/4 years. The rest of it heads south along the southern Washington coast, Oregon off Portland, all the way down to Northern California, Yreka, and down the west coast all the way. That's why I'm giving this to people who don't know that the world-renowned tide pools all along the British Columbia coast are essentially devoid of life. As Dana Durnford has reported on this program and has risked his life to find out and done the research, taken many trips up and down the coast, filming and photographing these tide pools, there's nothing left. They're gone. They're wiped out by the radiation. There used to be over 6,500 species available to be found in these tide pools. Now, he said, you're lucky if you can find 10 or 12. That's it. It's over. Done. And the same thing is happening along the Oregon coast, Northern California, Central, Southern California. Remember 3 years ago or so when all those seals and sea lions were dying off the coast of Southern California, L.A., Santa Monica, down to San Diego? They were trying to save hundreds and hundreds of them. They were all starving to death because the radiation in the water wiped out the sardines, the anchovies, the herring, and the other small fishes that the seals and sea lions eat. And the small fishes were dying because the plankton in the water that they ate, many of them, was also wiped out. Now, I bring this up only because Yoshi was down off Southern California, literally on the beaches, doing dosimeter readings and doing necropsies on a couple of seals and sea lions to find out what actually happened to them. The seals and sea lions were seen and observed to be actually licking the rocks on the shoreline to try to get nutrition. That's how bad it was. Yoshi, just a couple quick words or sentences about your trip in SoCal, then we'll go back to Rick.
Definitely the seals were hampered hard because they have to swim hard and very deep. There's a lot of macro sardines and so forth. But I think Rick's case is very, very something in contrast. Seagulls are much more opportunistic.
Yoshi, turn your body 90 degrees with that cell phone. Let's see if that helps.
First of all, the seagulls are different in that they're opportunistic. You know, they'll beg for sandwiches or whatever, and also they'll follow the fishing boats, as you know, and also whale watching boats, all these other boats begging. So that's what's so surprising, the fact that they are missing. You know, that there are other sources of food for them, you know, the garbage dumps and all that. So that's pretty disturbing. If it's gone that far to such opportunistic, omnivorous creatures, it's, you know, it's a step further than the sea lions and seals of California.
Okay, Rick, so the point is, and I think I sent you that map, that current, it actually comes together, two of them, picks up and sweeps with it if not most of, the admitted by TEPCO 400 metric tons a day of liquid radioactive death that goes through and under the wreckage of the plant. It's groundwater, and it's also the water they're still spraying on the exploded and destroyed reactors. That's 400 tons, metric tons a day that TEPCO admits going in. Well, Yoshi and I have talked about this for years. We don't trust TEPCO. Nobody there. Could be a 1,000 metric tons a day. And that's 365 days a year. That's why the North Pacific in the water is being destroyed. And then we're not talking about the rain and the other precipitation coming down in the water. So you get the idea. When you look at that current, it is undeniable that it is bringing enormous, gigantic amounts of radiation in the water across to the west coast of North America and splitting it, half going north, half going south. It's a catastrophe. Rick, tell us what happened up there.
Okay, every time I go traveling, I bring binoculars and a spotting scope with me so I can do observations. This time I was up there, and I, as Josie said, seagulls are scavengers. What really struck me was I was at the Granville Island it's like a Saturday market type of thing. They have food and local crafts and stuff like this. And I can remember just a couple years ago, I was sitting outside looking at False Bay, watching the little water taxis go by, and the seagulls were aggressive. They would come up to me, and I'd turn my head for a second to take the to grab a French fry out of my hand. They were so aggressive that they chased me back inside. This is just a couple years ago.
Uh-huh.
Now, the other day when I was there, I'm sitting at the same exact spot, same situation, watching little water taxis go by, eating my fish and chips, and I notice there are no seagulls. I'm looking around, no seagulls to be seen at all. Normally you'd see them in the parking lot, picking up garbage, picking up fries, picking up, you know, pulling out the waste fish wrappers and stuff like this.
Oh, out of the trash. They'd go into the trash cans. We used to
Absolutely.
See that.
They're doing what seagulls do. So I'm sitting there with my binoculars, sweeping the False Creek Basin area, which is probably 3/4 of a mile across. I've got a good view, 360 degrees, basically. 10-power binoculars. I can see anything floating or flying on the water for miles.
Uh-huh.
I can see absolutely nothing. Nothing. So that kind of got me going, thinking, what's going on here? I'm always paying attention here. Seagulls are ubiquitous. I can remember as a little kid in Portland, you'd see thousands of them. So where are the seagulls? Over the last 10 years, they've become less and less plentiful up there. So I made that note, went to the other side of the city, over to Cole Harbor area. Over there, it's probably 4 or 5 miles across. Looked out with my binoculars again, nothing to be seen at all. No seagulls at all. Okay.
Wow. Rick, let me ask you to pause right there. That's a good place to hold it. So two locations are already showing you no seagulls remaining. All right, stand by. We'll be right back in just a couple. With Yoichi Shimatsu, who has been really, in my humble and professional opinion, at the forefront in the world of telling the truth about the Fukushima calamity on this planet. Remember, this radioactivity is constantly building. Some of the isotopes, and there are apparently scores, if not hundreds of them, the cesium twins are particularly identifiable as coming from reactor meltdowns and explosions. So we have some of these isotopes are sporting half-lives of 50,000 years. You get it? It's building up all the time. Remember, I'm going to do a little bit of background here. East of Richland, Kennewick, and what's the third city, Yoshi? There's the tri-cities there. Richland. Richland, Kennewick, Pasco.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Well, east of that entire radioactive area is a cemetery, and it is strictly for babies born with no brains in their cranium.
Mm-hmm.
And this is not a joke. There is a cemetery for those hapless, tragic infants, and they're all east of the radiation up there. The radioactive dump facility has been leaking into the Columbia River there for decades. It's Hanford. You all know it as Hanford Nuclear Reservation, but Hanford is a catastrophe on the ground. All right, so that's one. Then we move west. We're hearing Rick in the San Juan Islands and around the San Juan Islands in the Puget Sound is a traditionally probably ancient school of orcas. They live there. It's a family of orca whales. Scientists from all over the world have studied them. They're tagged. They're monitored. There has been only one live birth of an orca whale. I believe it's 5 years now. And maybe some of you have seen those pictures of dead orca-birthed whales being held up by their mothers, obviously grieving. And then we move down the coast to L.A., as we talked about. Whales are coming up on shore, and they are determined to have less than 10% of their normal blubber or body fat. They're starving to death. Why? Because the North Pacific has largely been denuded of its animal and plant life, period. Rick, you've talked to us now about two locations where you saw zero seagull activity. Tell us more.
Okay, so from my 17th story motel room, I was able to stand on the balcony with my binoculars and do a sweep of 180 degrees. I could see for probably 10 miles at least, 15 miles. Could see nothing flying at all, which kind of surprised me. No pigeons or doves either, surprisingly enough. No Canadian geese, no ducks. Really no birds at all. You know, you would expect to see pigeons everywhere. So I'm going to Whistler. To go to Whistler, you go along Highway 1, along the sound there, the bay, whatever it is. So if you've got a good view of the islands across the way, there's a couple spots I've been going for years. I pull over to have a glass of wine and to enjoy the view, set up my telescope. I've got a 60-power spotting scope with me on a tripod. I set it up so I'm able to sweep the entire basin with my scope.
Nice.
No birds to be seen at all.
Nice.
I go ahead and walk down to the beach, walk along the beach. I see no vegetation at all. I'm speaking of kelp algae. I see no signs of any shells at all. Nothing growing on the rocks, no razor clams, no normal clams, no clams that have been opened by the seagulls. You know how you'll see broken shells.
Yeah, they crack one open for a snack. Yeah, sure, of course.
Absolutely. Nothing seen at all, kind of surprising. Drive to another spot, set my telescope up again, sweep the entire basin. I can see for many miles. It's not hard to see stuff floating on the water. See nothing out there at all. See nothing flying. Really astounding. Finally,
and the tidal area along the shore, all the rocks, the tide pools, and all that. You're again reporting that you saw virtually nothing.
This is correct. I saw no sea anemones. None of
starfish
no life at all. Really,
no plants.
Nothing. Nothing clinging to the rocks at all. I noticed, made the same observations in downtown Vancouver, British Columbia, in the basin area there. I will take my bike and I will ride the Stanley Park Loop, which is about 9-10 miles, and stop periodically, sweep the area with the binoculars, look at their equivalent of the Golden Gate Bridge. You've got an excellent view of the area, 10-power binoculars. You should see something either floating or flying. Nothing to be seen at all. I found the same thing to be true when I went out to the University of British Columbia Ethnographic Museum out there. You've got a great view. Binoculars can't see anything at all. Finally, I saw a couple seagulls towards dusk one night when I was at the, again, back at Granville, getting some dinner and getting some nice chocolates for a snack. A couple of them came up and stuff, but it's nothing like I had seen before. And, of course, they were scattering. They were going through the garbage can. But, you know, a half a dozen of them. You know, you'd see hundreds of them. When I was sitting there previously, I'd be eating my fish and chips, and I would be surrounded by them. There'd be, you know how noisy seagulls can get. They can get pretty raucous and stuff. No noise.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
No activity at all. Just stunning. Really scary, actually. You know.
And you used to go there. Am I correct, Rick? When there were tide pools full of life and activity. We're going back 10 years. I assume your history there is a long one.
Yes, I've been going there for 10 years. I'm not as familiar with the tide pools as I am in Oregon. I've lived in the Oregon for 60 years, so I've been going to the same tide pools for 50 years. And the same thing holds true here. There is no where I have been going for 50 years.
In Oregon.
Enjoying the life that's not there now.
In Oregon, the same thing. Yeah.
In Oregon, gone. The same thing. Absolutely. Down by Astoria, we've got a beach that's like 9 miles long. You'd go along that beach and there would be thousands and thousands and thousands of seagulls and hundreds of sand dollars that had been broken open and stuff. Last time I was there, I was stunned to see no seagulls at all and no sand dollars. During the low tide at Yaquina Bay, which is by Newport, I went down there specifically during one of the lowest tides, again, with my spotting scope from a few hundred yards away. I was able to examine the bridge pylons that are almost always underwater except for this occasion when the tides were extra low. Nothing growing on the pylons at all. It was just stunning because you would expect, you know how razor clams are. They're ubiquitous. And the kelp,
of course,
everything.
Of course, yeah.
So I'm seeing the same thing at all the spots I would go, but I'm most aware of the Oregon coast, but the same thing held true up there. What I was really noticing was there were no birds, and it got me looking and stuff. Then when I was walking along the beach, where's the vegetative material? No small, you know, I would expect to see sea anemones, starfish, razor clams, various other clams, some crabs, maybe some crab backs that have been consumed by the seagulls, you know, some claws, nothing at all. Just really stunning. It's scary. You know, as you know, they found radiation. They've tested and found cesium at the mouth of the Columbia. They found it down at Gold Beach down in southern Oregon. This was just a couple of years ago, so it's very
at Gold Beach. Now, Gold Beach is which river empties out near Gold Beach?
I'm not sure if that's. Oh God, that's the one that has.
Am I wrong? I thought it was Gold Beach, and maybe somebody else, another river.
It's
but
Rogue
anyway,
river, I believe
it's there. I think it's the Rogue that comes out of Gold Beach. I think you're right.
I believe that's correct. I believe it is the Rogue Rivers. I've done the jet boat tour there.
Yeah. So there you go. They got the jet boats at the low end and up at my end up here too. So, all right. This is Yoshi. This is just confirmation of what we started to warn people about
totally
8 years ago.
Yeah, it's totally depressing because we're going beyond the point of no return. I mean, when we're talking a few years back, maybe if TEPCO had stopped, maybe if the governments of Canada and the United States and Mexico took some action, maybe. Life might come back, but we're looking at total annihilation. And also what's alarming is that seagulls, you know, have enormously strong immune systems, probably much stronger than human immune systems. They're like at the top of the food chain above where we are. If they're disappearing, you can just about forget about the human population, bunch of monkeys, you know, along the West Coast. You know, this is really an extinction event, total. And so I think any hope we had, you know, of getting out of warning, of taking action, of holding this thing off, this is less than 10 years after Fukushima. I mean, this is happening at light speed.
It's coming up on 9 years. And
yeah,
that is incredibly fast.
We're talking about evolutionary terms, something Darwin could not, you know, I mean, it took, you know, actually the dinosaurs when that huge comet struck, it took thousands of years before they were wiped out, you know, but, so this is light speed. This is going faster than any extinction event, I think, in the whole history of the Earth, you know, of life itself.
Let me go back to Rick for just a minute. Rick, did you notice in Oregon where you live a difference in, let's just call them songbirds, small birds, migrating birds, local birds, hummingbirds, sparrows, orioles, blackbirds, you name it. Down where I am in southern Oregon, there's a scant percentage left of what used to be here. It used to be you'd open the doors or the windows in the mornings and you'd hear a cacophony of birds and sounds. And at night, the same thing. I can open my window where I am at night in the summer and I won't hear a single cricket. you can go some places and hear a relatively few of them, but they're just gone. What about the insect and bird populations near your home in Oregon? Have you noticed anything there?
Absolutely. A month and a half ago, you had a gentleman on from my area and stuff that spoke about this issue as well, and I'm in full agreement with him. I really haven't noticed so much the songbirds because they have been chased off over the last 40 years by the starlings. What I have noticed, though, is that the starlings are gone. There used to be, back in the late 80s, I lived near the Holly Farm up here by Twofold Holly Farm, and at dusk, and I'm not exaggerating, you would see 10,000 starlings come in. There would be so many starlings, they would weigh down the branches of the trees, and you would think that they were going to break, and they would be so raucous and noisy, you would come outside wondering what was going on. At my house, I've got some 30-foot holly trees and stuff, and that would be a food source for the starlings during the off months. I've also got some hawthorn trees. Okay, in recent years, I've noticed that the starlings have completely disappeared. A few years ago, I would go for the entire year and not see a starling at all, zero and stuff. In the last year or two, I've seen maybe a dozen at a time. But in the old days, they would wake me up during the day. I work at night, so they would wake me up. I'd go outside, and it'd be zillions of them out there squawking and eating holly bush or holly berries. That's not the case anymore. We have
a few of
the songbirds have come back since the starlings are gone, but certainly the density of them is very low.
That's interesting. I wasn't aware of the natural way that the starlings were pushing and displacing the songbirds. It makes sense. I saw one pair of starlings this year. Red-winged blackbirds, if you will. That's the same general family. And nothing else. A few times birds will migrate through here. Robins will come through. You might see 20, 30 of them at the most. Used to be just all over the place. It's changed. We have what Dana Durnford called the quiet forest syndrome. You go into the woods and you don't hear much anymore. Nothing. No birds, no insect, no chirping. They're quiet. And we get this report from British Columbia all the way down into Oregon. Just quiet. No more wildlife. Now, that brings us to the obvious question. How much longer is it going to be before we begin to fade? I'm not going to say we're going to vanish, but we are going to begin to fade. 53% of Americans will get cancer in their lifetime. I would suspect and project, with this radioactivity constantly being loaded on us in our entire biosphere and environment, that 53% could go to 73%, 83%. We're going to pay the price for this. There's no question. Yoshi?
Yeah, we are paying the price, no doubt. That's why I'm in Florida. I need a respite. I need a break from it. Otherwise, I'll be a goner very soon. I could feel the radioactivity coming on. I know the symptoms, how it feels. Needed to escape. And it seems the federal government, all the nuclear scientists, they need to find new ways to put their profession to work now with these atomic powered, radioactivity powered rockets that are spraying over thousands of miles along their flight paths. This is totally insane. It's happening here, China and Russia, and is obviously going to spread. I think, all the major countries with missile programs, India, Iran, Israel, the whole lot of them are going to adopt this technology. And that's going to finish off the last pockets of safety. If push really comes to shove and the West Coast has to be evacuated, where is everyone going to go, right? Here to the southeast, to the southeast corner of the United States. The Middle West is dying. The Rockies are gone. It's the East Coast is all left, but they're firing these rockets out this way. So it's like, it seems humanity's intent on the great kill-off. Humanity is the agent of the end of mammal, or the end of all species, the end of life on Earth. So
when you say rockets...
It's a frightening thought, because this is Christmas, when our thoughts should be much merrier and happier and hopeful. And we're looking at something totally depressing.
When you say rockets, he's also talking about these nuclear-powered cruise missiles, hypersonic cruise missiles.
Oh, yeah.
That can
hypersonic
be
cruise
sent
missiles.
Aloft,
yeah,
and they can stay
exactly.
up for a long time.
Exactly. And they're coming in all sizes and shapes, and they're being fired off at will. And they're not telling anybody when they're firing.
No.
We have no idea which direction they're going, when to take cover, nothing like that. You know, they're playing with everyone's lives of families. Kids are outside playing, you know? And
it makes me sick.
Flying over there.
Well,
yeah,
right after
the
irresponsible. Totally irresponsible. What the hell do they care, though? We're all expendable. Right after the Fukushima meltdowns, who was it? Ted Gunderson, I think. Not Ted Gunderson.
Arnie
Gunderson. Arnie said, and he's a nuclear physicist engineer. He said that the radiation coming across in the North Pacific Current and in the air currents at one point was so thick in Seattle that the average Seattle resident was inhaling up to 6 hot particles a day for a period of weeks. I know it swept through here. There were a couple of cells that came through here. Oh, I could feel it in my nostrils, my nose, my mouth, metallic taste. There's no question about what it was. This is 2 weeks after the blast. So I knew to watch for it. Rick, I want to thank you. Is there anything you'd like to add to your just superb report?
Not at all, Jeff. I just wanted to thank you and Yoshi. I appreciate what you're doing and stuff. I cannot understand why in 9 years we have heard nothing in Portland about it. Nothing at all. It's stunning. You know, we have an open water reservoir system here. The heavy water is obviously coming down in the rain and polluting our drinking water. Why haven't we heard anything? Where is civil government?
Well, because one of the reasons that you haven't heard about it is because there's really not a damn thing they can do about it. That's one of the reasons. The other reasons are cowardice and the simple fact that big government doesn't care about human life. It just doesn't. So, Rick, thank you so much again. Keep me posted about things as you see them. Happy to talk to you again down the road. Merry Christmas to you and be well.
Thank you very much, Jeff. Thank you, Yoshi. Merry Christmas to everyone. Good night.
Good night, Rick. All right, my friend. It's building up. It's not going away.
I mean, there are methods to remove the tritium out of the water. It's expensive, but how much drinking water do we
have? I wish that's all we had to remove, though.
Not that much. You know, I mean, bathing, okay, but I'm talking about drinking water. Things could be done. They should have been done. They should have been done years ago.
They've been begging for it.
This is the worst case of denial that we've ever seen. I can't think of any greater denial than this when this has been spreading across North America. It's affecting Southeast Asia. It's down in Australia. That's what's causing all these wildfires in Australia. I wrote about this a long time ago, how the hot protons are coming across on the Earth's electromagnetic system right down to that area, New South Wales. And the place has been on fire for months, and they can't stop it. So, we've written about it. We've discussed it. The information, and a lot of people who criticize us have gone silent. You know, they started to get a glimmer of what we're talking about. They were deniers, and they've gone silent. And that's real cowardice. Come on, face the facts like we have. We've been trying to advocate. Let's do something. Anything. Let's try at least. Let's try to win this game. It's the last quarter, right? The last inning. You got to go up to bat and hit a home run. I mean, we've got to start, mustering the courage to do it.
Two quick comments. One, all of this that has been raining down on the West Coast and America, don't think it stops here. It goes all across the country. It goes all the way to Europe. Europe warned its people, pregnant women and young children, do not eat lettuce and green vegetables. This is within 3 weeks after the blast at Fukushima, because it went all the way to Europe, and they were monitoring it. That was honest.
The Arctic. There's nothing to stop it across the Arctic. Yeah,
no,
right?
Huh? No. Yeah. Huh? That's one issue. There are so many to talk about. I just wish I had a plan. We don't have a plan. I saw a commercial on commercial television the other night last night, and I don't know, I just happened to watch TV for a little while to see what was going on.
Yeah.
There was a 60-second commercial produced by NBC, which has mm-hmm. the rights, apparently, for the 2020 Olympics of Death. And they were yeah. showing all the mugshots and athletic prowess of our great mm-hmm. athletes that we're going to send mm-hmm. to the radioactive Olympics in Tokyo in 2020. They were pushing that already. And next to that commercial was one about the glories of 5G. They were glorifying cell phone towers with 5G antenna arrays on them, beaming these beautiful lavender-colored beams through the night sky of a cityscape. Mm-hmm. It's crazy. Mm-hmm. They're turning these things to icons of delight for the masses.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
The realities of death. And just one last point on this Christmas. Little Greta Thunberg has... I'll probably have to write something before the end of the year, but has anyone ever connected her the problem of her nervous system, of her cognitive system?
Asperger's, right?
Chernobyl.
I think Asperger's.
Yeah. Has anyone ever bothered to try to connect the fact that Chernobyl swept massively over Scandinavia? They had to kill every single reindeer and start the herds over. And that happened basically to her mother's generation, before she
Good
was
point.
Gestated.
No one's raised that to you.
Yeah, I mean, they got her talking about climate change is something she has no idea about. And I think there's the obvious correlation between Greta and her condition and the state of the planet.
Good point.
Was Chernobyl, was radioactivity.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I think
people
we
don't know.
With the denial, let's get to the reality of what this stuff is all about.
George Soros is behind little grim Greta, and the funny thing is they have been filming her, Yoshi, since she began making her appearances and statements on climate. They're making a film of this. It's all been staged from the beginning.
It's fakery, and that's why I think they know what she really is, the child of Chernobyl, and they've got to do the diversionary campaign to pull their head, to keep their heads in the hole, basically, of denial.
What an interesting observation. Never thought of it, and you are right.
I remember. I was there right after the reindeer cull in that part of the world, and it was massively radioactive. And women were having abortions like crazy over there.
Wow. All right. Thank you for being here. I hope you continue to feel better. Geez, stay inside.
Well,
don't go out at 3 in the morning.
Yeah. Well, that's what I've been doing. I mean, but it is ironic. You know, you can run, but you can't hide. It just goes to show, right?
Never more truth.
Yeah.
Than that.
So, Merry Christmas, Jeff.
Thanks.
We look forward to the new year. We continue again, hopefully, with a greater optimism. We're going to put in this last ditch. Before the Tokyo Olympics.
Will.
All right.
We got a lot to talk about between now and then. And Yoshi has a paper coming out later tonight, so watch for that as well.
Yeah,
all right, my friend.
Hypersonic event here. Okay.
Take care.
Thank you. All right.
Okay.
Good night.
Good night. Yoichi Shimatsu, again, one of the world's foremost environmental researchers and writers, former editor of the powerful Japan Times Weekend Edition. All right, we'll be right back. Hold on.